of times the most fake people, their job is talking and making people feel comfortable.
Yeah.
You know, and the realest people are going to make you feel uncomfortable.
You are not more intelligent than me. That was some of the words my mom uttered in here as we're wrapping up the experience of being together in the last couple of weeks. And it was obviously unprecedented what we had happened with Hurricane Ian and the devastation. I know for me, in the 31 years that I've been living in Florida, it is by far the biggest hurricane, most powerful hurricane that I've ever been a part of. And obviously for many of us that lived here that long, you know that you experience so many tropical storms and hurricanes, and they come through in every which way, shape, or form. And it's one of those experiences that this one was more powerful than any other one that we've ever experienced. Luckily, we have a great infrastructure. Luckily, we have the resources, and being able to pick up, I only lost power and for about 3 or 4 days, and no major damage on the house. I just had an adjuster come in today on a Sunday, and you know, just kind of keeping chugging along. But the world here has changed, and we're doing our best as a community to make sure that we get back up and running normal. And obviously during that time, my mother was advised to come down here to stay with me and to come down here. And I wasn't aware of her condition at all. I mean, I was just like, I saw her last year around Christmas time. I want to say she came down for a theater show. We went to West Side Story and everything was fine. She was able to walk, get up, and do all these things that, obviously not the pace of myself or even my daughter, but you get the point. Like, she was just functional and all that good stuff, and we shared some good moments. But this time around, from the moment that she got out of the car, because she was afraid of being up there and people were advising her, again, I didn't want her to come down here because in the building she stayed is pretty safe. But this is the story of my life, which I wanted to elaborate on. And this is going to be a long one for me because I am going to just explain things from my point of view once again. And it's only for my daughter's sake, really, because as my daughter gets older, she gets more aware and understands these things a little bit better. I'm probably going to send this MP3 to my dad because I know when my sister listens to this, she tends to. What I've noticed with my sister in the few times that I've talked to her in the last 5 or 6 years is that her filtration is different than, let's say, when I talk to somebody else. I could tell that it's a bit jaded when I explain things, jaded from her anecdotal experiences. And I feel that, you know, when I explain myself in this journey and realizing that, my mom was here, and obviously she was not in any shape to do anything. She was a vegetable, basically. She wasn't able to get up. She wasn't able to get into bed. She wasn't able to do anything. I had to take her to. Could you just imagine this when it comes to senior care living? It was somebody that was not able to function in any way, shape, or form. Cannot get up. Cannot go to the bathroom. Cannot take a shower, cannot get out of bed, cannot feed themselves. Me feeding themselves, yes, but not being able to cook. It's really a detrimental shift from what I saw last time she was here. So it was mind-blowing, to say the least. And these things are never communicated with me because that's been a lot of these things that I will talk about have been the story of my life and the story of the dynamics that I've dealt with. And unfortunately for me, the only people that are going to truly understand my perspective and agree with it 100% are going to be the people that see me in the trenches on a daily basis. And those people are not my blood DNA family. They're far away. They don't live in Florida. And they have a different set of views and experiences, and even culturally different than what I am dealing with. So I think for anybody that knows me and understands me, it knows that I'm a pretty good person. I think I like to make an effort, and I like to be good to people. I like to be sensitive and empathetic and all of that. But I think I also let it be known that I create boundaries, that you have, that I have gone to a point in life where now when someone's exuding negative energy, whether it's judgment, whether it's lack of support, whether it is neglect, any negative emotion that a person can exude to another person, and I'm experiencing it and feeling it, I quickly create boundaries or disconnect altogether, simply because it's not good for my mental well-being, period, end of story. I don't think I can function and be a good father, a good worker. And the beautiful thing about me and being in this format is that there's coworkers that know I do this podcast and listen to it. My boss knows this, that I do this. I have friends that know I do this. And I know plenty of people that I don't even know that listen to this, that have always reached out to me throughout the years. And this one is going to be an elaborate one, like I said, because I feel this one is just explaining this chapter of the complicated relationship with myself and my mom and my family. Because the one thing about this experience is we're dealing with a person, which is my mom, which has always, during the course of me living with her, has always fought back advice that I've given her, has never taken any advice that I've given her, has never in any way, shape, or form trusted the things that I've said to be good to her and to help her be in a better state. That's the reality of my connection with my mom. I lived with her, and for many years, I did reverse parenting, which was when you're 9 years old, you translate. Anytime I worked and made money, I gave it to her. As I got older in high school and officially was able to work, I worked full time while going to school, while playing basketball, while helping her as well, with no support from family, with no type of understanding of what it is I needed to do to move forward. And when you dealt with that anchor that you're having to carry, and for many of us, when we think of mother and son dynamics or mother and daughter, like we think of our mother as this person that is encouraging, endearing, supportive, philosophical, able to be there to help you through your tough times, be loving, be full of gratitude. And those are none of the things that I experience in my connection with my mother to this day. It's a very hard thing to fathom, because many of you that listen are mothers or have relationships with your mothers that would not make any sense. So I understand that dynamic. And just like my family is not able to understand the dynamic of, some do, but some don't, as far as when it comes to being a heavily involved father in your daughter's life. That's something that many of them, I believe a few of them, it's a concept they can't comprehend, especially as a single father. And I'm single father in every sense of the word, because I don't have family. I don't have an ex-girl. I don't have a girlfriend. I don't have a wife. I don't delegate my duties to anybody. When I wake up, I do what I have to do. I don't expect a pat on the back. I don't even care to get recognition. That's not what I do this for. I do this because it's the right thing to do. But one thing that you realize with people is that when it comes to the parent-child dynamic, and there's this level of gratitude that as a child you have to exude, no one holds the parents accountable for their lack of parenting, for their lack of nurturing, for their lack of loving, for their lack of support, for their lack of showing gratitude and appreciation to their child when they're doing the right things. And that's something that I've always had to deal with, the excessive neglect that I've experienced. Now, my sister will tell you a different story because she left the house at 16 back in 92. And she had her opinions about the fact of how she was being treated versus me and how that impacted her life. And I believe in some ways she still carries that resentment, because when my mom was up there in Chicago, she used to call me all the time and tell me how my sister was mistreating her, making fun of her, and how her daughter, you know, my niece, they were basically gang up on her from time to time. Again, is this accurate or not? I don't know. But the thing is, that's what she felt. It was her truth. And there was a reason why she ended up coming back from Chicago to Florida, because that dynamic of that relationship, there's still a lot of turmoil. On my side, in the mother and son dynamic, I've always been a person that's been there for her. I did my best when I went to high school. I remember in college, when I was making my decision of what school I would go to, I had two options. I had Indiana University to go on a basketball scholarship, on a manager scholarship, I should say, because my head coach played for the head assistant, Norm Ellenberger, rest in peace. And he was the head assistant at that time for Indiana. And I guess they were able to give me an opportunity, but at that time I wasn't trying to go far away. And the second option was USF in Tampa. I had just received a scholarship, full ride tuition academically. It wasn't sports related, because when I played basketball, I started too late. So I didn't have recognition. And in those days, we didn't have YouTube and all so on and so forth. So when I was initially leaning to go to USF, and of course the last option was the one that I ended up doing, but one of the people that took an interest in me and helping me out in high school said to me, Mr. Lee, he said, Minnow, you cannot leave Lakeland. You have to stay here to help your mom. And I was like, you know what? You're right. I have to stay here. And the thing about the burden of being good to your mom and being there, being a provider and a helper and always, is that it stifles your ability to grow and to find your career and to spread your wings, because I wasn't fortunate to have the structure of stability in the household. I think that I left the house at 9 years old when my mom decided to take us, and for whatever her reasons were, right? And I know what her reasons were, but she decided to do it in a fashion that my father wasn't aware of, meaning that I lived in Puerto Rico, and next thing you know, boom, air flying ticket, I'm landing in JFK. I have no fucking clue what's going on here. All I was told was, we're going to church. I was given a yellow envelope. And I come to find out later on that it's mostly, they didn't tell me because they were afraid that I was going to tell my father. Because I guess I'm not able to keep my mouth shut. And that began the world of the experiences that I ended up having in a lower socioeconomic environment. And obviously that impacted me, that impacted my sister in different ways. We would argue, we would fight, physically fight. And that's something that impacted her in a way where she had to leave. And I was here stuck living with my mom. No one else to help, because her brothers, one was schizophrenic, lives in Lakeland, and another one's in and out of prison that just recently started really bad-mouthing her to an extreme where she told me about it. She said, you know what, my other brother was calling me all these names. And I was like, oh, fascinating. Okay. It's a constant theme with my mom, right? So here I am doing my best to try to better myself and also, quote unquote, do the right thing. I don't know, for whatever reason, just trying to do it and playing basketball, following my passion, found my identity, found myself as Minnow. I was like, wow, Minnow, cool. And this journey has been one of realizing, when I was in that stage in my 20s, that I needed to disconnect from my mom. Not because I didn't want to be there, because of the toxicity that she was exuding. It was a level of ungratefulness. It was a level of not lack of nurturing. And from the outside world, you wouldn't think that. You would be like, wow, she's very sweet, she's very quiet, very humble. But many times I would ask many questions about things and I would be quickly shut down. There wasn't any communication. There wasn't any type of conversations, a heart to heart, or, hey son, how's your day going? Or, you know, how's everything going? It was more of like, hey, when you get home, do this. Hey, I need you to do this. I need you to do that. You need to take me here. Okay, stop, do this. And at one point in that relationship, I ended up saying, Mom, like, the way you're going right now, you're not going to end up in a good place. And I started giving her advice. And I started doing things because I was being exposed to people in my life that were successful. And seeing how other families and other dynamics and how people found a way to succeed. And I would try to pass along many of these lessons and many of these things to my mom, to constantly be reminded and constantly be told, you're not my father, you're not my husband, you don't tell me what to do. So when you have a dynamic of a mother that is not able to fend for herself in a way where she's barely struggling, she is not very good with money, and she doesn't care to make her life better, and forcing me to be the butler while I'm trying to better my life so I can provide for her and others, it was a very toxic situation and it was tough. I used to tell my friends in college, be thankful that your parents still worry about you, because I've had to always worry about my mom for the longest time. And when I decided to leave, I remember it was an accident that my mom had. I had to buy her a car, I had to get her an attorney, I had to do all these things. And remember, this is me also trying to have a career for myself. And this is something that's been going on for a long time. And I remember talking to my grandmother at that time, and I said, this is a tough one. I don't think I can continue with this. And she goes and says, well, you got to do what you got to do. You know, your mom has chosen her life and you got to live yours. Only to, many years later, my grandmother to make a comment of, why did you leave your mom there? So there's this always, what I've experienced from my mom's side of the family is always this level of schizophrenia, in a way, where they'll say one thing one minute and then it's a completely different thing another, and you're sitting there confused, like, didn't you just give me the green light to do this? Or, and my mother's no different, and I understand why my sister gets frustrated with her, because it is a monster to deal with somebody that you're trying to help, you're trying to assist, and pushes back. And not only do they push back, but they push back to a situation or an answer or a solution that is not an optimal one. And the one thing I could say about myself versus other people in the family, maybe outside of my father, is that I've built myself in a successful way. I don't toot my horn. I'm not here to talk about my resume or what I'm doing or what I have done, but it is something that I could probably put on a resume and talk to people and not be ashamed of. And the one thing I don't talk about is how I got here, because I think people, not because of shame, but because I don't think people can understand. It's hard to understand a mother that doesn't love you or show you love, never told you she loved you, never told you she cared for you, never gave you a hug, never gave you a kiss, never gave it no exuding of love and affection and support. Never in my life, 45 years still counting. And just to let you know, Annette, if you do tell her about it and I all of a sudden get hugs and kisses, I know where it came from. So I hope that if you want to talk to her like you always do for me, I thank you, because I know you try to straighten her out to do the right thing based on what I talk about on these podcasts. But you got to understand with me, just like I don't get along with my sister simply because there isn't any, it isn't a genuine connection. I remember when my father got us together for the first time in Puerto Rico, and it was because it was his mother's dying wish. I remember hearing the family judging her and just talking about the daughter being too dark, which blew me away, because there's this culture in Hispanic culture that is very strong with colorism, very strong. And I was so blown away. And I remember going to my sister saying, you know what? I don't care what's happened. I don't care what you've been through. If these people want to judge you, they don't know what you've been through, and I'm here for you. Okay. And that obviously didn't carry very long, because when I started finding out that my father was calling me a mama's boy, that I was spoiled, that I was shielded or sheltered or whatever the terms he was using at that time, it was mind-blowing to me. I said, where is he getting this from? Why does he think that because I go to college and my mom pays for it? Does he think that? I was really perplexed. But as time went on, I realized that what he was doing was getting this information from my sister. Like, he was like, what the fuck are you doing with a sports management? What are you going to do with that? Like, why are you going to basketball? That's horrible. That's a horrible decision. Why would you do that? Like, there was this heavy level of judgment that was being exuded from my dad when I didn't convey my whole life or anything like that. It was my sister behind my back talking to my father and having an opinion about that. And these are things that hurt, because once you break my trust, it's hard to get that back, especially in a way where I'm willing to support you 100%. And that began the levels of the distrust, of the judgment, of the resentment building up to where it is now, where I don't care. My sister can be dead. I don't wish her nothing, no ill will, but if she dies tomorrow, I don't care. Great. Life goes on. And I'm sure she feels the same way about me. Great. Life goes on. I'm not in a position to speak for her, obviously, because I don't talk to her. But actions speak for you. Actions or inactions speak louder than words. And I understand that the journey that we've had, and she blames me partly for her reasoning for leaving. At the end, it was her choice. She feels that I physically abused her to the point that she had to leave. Okay, right on. I mean, that was news to me, because we used to fight. But again, if you want to paint yourself as a victim, that's fine. If you don't want to say that you had any blame in that, because the whole household was toxic and we all had a part in it. And, you know, from my father's side of the family, which my sister leans on, mostly because they helped her, especially my father in particular, helped her to get her up. Because when my sister ended up leaving, I don't know what decisions she made in her life, but there weren't good ones. And there were not good ones because at the end of the day, my father had to come in and help her and be where she's at today. Good for her. And I never, fortunately for me, I was aware enough that the toxicity that I was around, I didn't want anything to do with that. And I always tell this to people, that if you're telling me to deal with my family dynamics of the toxicity, of the judgment, of the lack of support, of the lack of encouragement, and deal with that instead of going to where I call now suburbia America and being able to not disown my family, but like I'm not interested in that world in any way, shape, or form. Not that I don't love them, not that I couldn't, I don't even know if I could love them. It's just too old. But I'm just saying that I would love to have a connection, but even in my times when I was visiting, there's just too much time. There's just too much of a disconnect. And especially when family puts themselves in a pedestal that's higher than you, or it feels that way. Because that's the one thing that a lot of families don't understand about how they operate. Is that, fortunately for me, I've been around deeply involved with white families, black families, and Hispanic families. And I mean deep in the sense of they allow me to stay in their home. They consider me adopted family members in their family, in all walks of life. And to have had an insight into many of these families and be able to compare, it's something that I take. That's why I speak the way I do, because I've had a spectrum of experiences intimately with different families from different walks of life. And I'm able to say fairly that, you know, my family can be very toxic, very judgmental. And if, especially from my father's side, and if you don't fall in line with their views, then they're going to have a problem with it. My father's is a person that he's very stern in his ways, but I understand why, because he succeeded. Like, if you're playing the rat race game, he won the rat race game. He's retired, doing well for himself, doing it. He worked his tail off, doing it by any means. And he's in a good place where he's able to take care of himself, take care of his family, take care of others. So I understand that perspective. And because I come from that perspective too. Because when you're dealing with the challenges that I dealt with and no one was there, and now here I am doing what I'm doing, then yeah, why am I going to listen to somebody that is not in the same position as me? I get it. And I think that the problem that I have with dealing with my mom is that she's a person that she is not able to appreciate that. Like, at one time it's like, you know what, I'm very proud of you, son. I'm very proud of you, of the work you've done, of the sacrifices you've made, of the things that you have accomplished in your life. Or even ask me, how's your life? What do you do for a living? What is it about, you know, how was things with your ex-wife? You know, there was no, and again, these are dynamics that a regular person would never understand, because they can't fathom a family member not caring, especially when the child, meaning me, is able to have something that they can feel proud of. Why is it difficult for parents, or for my parents, to exude that level of pride, that level of appreciation? And then with my father, I understand that, because I don't think my life will ever topple his as far as challenges. I agree with that. I think always the prior generation has it harder than the newer one. Just like I had it harder than my daughter, right? But the difference between me and him is that I understand the challenges that my daughter is experiencing. I understand the things, the obstacles that she's going to have to go through, or is currently going through. And it's a whole different world than the one I went through. And when you're aware of that, you're aware that your challenges are unique to you, and it's hard to compare. It's like trying to compare a sports car to a luxury car. Like, you know which one's faster, you know which one has the biggest horsepower, but it's a different experience altogether. It truly is. And when you're having that dynamic of having people, or initially when I met with him, it was wanting him to appreciate how I've made it through the challenges that I had. But it was very difficult for him to accept, because he felt your life wasn't harder than mine. You were catered, you were nurtured, you were coddled. And I know where he was getting that information from, because he wasn't getting it from me. So unfortunately for me, a picture was painted, and I try to correct it and I try to show them who I was, but I could sense there's a level of jealousy from my sister. It was. And an example that I can say is, on my 40th birthday, many times my dad has taken my daughter and my sister and her daughter to many trips. Flown on many times, cruises, trips, all of that. No problems. And never having a great experience. And I will always tell him, like, man, that's awesome that you're building that with her. That's great. I'm so happy for you in that regard. There's never been a sense of jealousy with that. And there's never been a level of, what are you doing for me? And one time on my 40th, I was like, you know, it would be cool. It would be cool for me and my dad to have a trip, to just be like men, just shoot the shit and hang out. And I tell him of that idea, and he jumps on. He's like, you know, that's a good idea. That's cool. We've never done that. Let's do it. And it wasn't about me asking him to pay, because he knows that about me. I don't ask him to pay for anything. It was just me saying, hey, I just want to spend time with you. I always tell him that. It's always about spending time with you. And when I go and we get the ball rolling, he calls me back probably about a week later or so. He's like, hey, listen, I talked to your sister, and I don't think she's with that. You got to figure that out, because, you know, she's wanting to come along and she's wanting to be a part of it. So, of course, you know, my sister, being the way she's always been, when I call her and I ask her, hey, dad said that you wanted to be a part of this, that I had to schedule around you, because she's a teacher, so she only can do it in the summers. So it went from a desired trip exclusively for me and my dad, not trying to compete with her, not trying to usurp her, I have no jealousy about what connection they have. I don't. It's beautiful. Whatever it is, awesome. I truly mean that. But I just wanted to give him and give myself some personal one-on-one time doing something that we had never done before. And I felt that was the right opportunity. And of course, when I called her and asked her about it, she's like, I don't know. Just playing the total, I didn't do it. I don't know what you're talking about. And that's how my sister has always been. Like, when I approach her directly about things, she is never direct with me. Because when you get, I guess when I catch her in the hand in the cookie jar, she tends to be like my daughter sometimes. Like when I, because my daughter is always afraid to speak the truth directly to me, because she thinks she's going to get in trouble. And I tell her all the time, you're not going to get in trouble. Why would you get in trouble? And I don't understand, but that's pretty funny, right? But I think that's always been my sister. Just a person that feels entitled. I feel because of the trauma she went through, she feels that she deserves every penny and then some that she gets. She's obviously benefited from that from my father, to the point where I believe he even put her on a budget, or helped her understand the value of budgeting. Because when you think you deserve something and you've lived poor and you've been through the trenches, and I get it. You know, I get the mentality, but I wasn't trying to take away from that. And unfortunately, she took my shine in that moment. And I realized that because she probably doesn't even remember this, but I had a conversation with her when we were on decent terms. And she was just telling me along the line, yeah, I'm going to get mine. I'm going to get the money. I'm going to get paid. I'm going to get what I can because they weren't there for us growing up. I'm like, wow, that's an extreme view for me, but okay. Right? I mean, I don't expect any inheritance or anything. I'm just doing my thing, doing me. But she just has different intentions about that. And my dad, I think, knows. I mean, he's not silly like that. I mean, he knows that what the game that she's playing and what she's up, but he loves it. I think if I'm to psychoanalyze my dad, I think he takes a certain level of pride with providing for others. I think he enjoys that. I think he values being like the anchor of the family and doing things his own way. And sometimes what happens when you do things your own way and you built yourself in a way that people can't tell you what to do, it's a very set way of creating your happiness. And I get it, because I think that's where I am in life. And I've been like this for the past 10 years, is just very happy with who I am and how I've been and how I've become, and not having to owe anything to anybody as far as how I feel, how I need to act, and how I need to present myself to the world. I have a Pigpen shirt. It says, "Be you, the world will follow, or the world will adjust to you." That's how I feel, because I take a lot of pride, and I never reflect on my journey, but when I have conversations with people about it, they're very in awe, and they let me know, and I'm like, you know what? Thanks, man. I have to be reminded of the challenges I went through, even though my family, which everyone values and allows and wants people to support, and nothing comes between family, doesn't do the same for me. And I understand that, because a lot of them weren't there for me for a long periods of time. And I for a long time, I didn't want anything to do with them, because there was a lot of resentment with me not feeling like they were looking for me. Now, you all imagine yourselves as a 9-year-old, 10-year-old kid, and all these things are happening where you being uprooted from your routine. You don't know why. No explanation. And when you ask why things are happening, they tell you, shut the fuck up. You don't need to ask. Well, you just kind of live in a world of curiosity, of talking to yourself and questioning things. And that's the contrarian mentality that I have, that I don't, I'm always looking at things from different perspectives. And as I've gotten older, I've gotten very smart about it. I wish my brain was as good as my body, you know? But it's, I wish my body was as good as my brain. But when you're in this position that you are, I guess you realize that the challenges that you've had are not understood by your bloodline. I realize that the best way to do it is just to disconnect, because there's no sense in trying to talk to people that are set in their ways and have their opinions and view you a certain way. Many times, people that are close to me, that see me every day in the grind and all this stuff, they understand. They see how I am, and my family doesn't have a clue. The only way they have a clue is because my sister listens to these podcasts, and she tells my mom, she tells my dad, she tells everybody, and then she spins it in her own way, which is great. No problem. Like, you do you, boo. But I think the one thing about my sister is that she has very personal intentions. And I try to tell that to my daughter, that because my daughter was telling me that she talked to her recently, even though I've asked my sister not to call her, because I would prefer to her to try to rectify, to reconcile our relationship in a genuine way before you connect with my child. Why do I say that? Because any of you put yourself in the analogy of you having a brother or sister and you don't get along with them, and because they don't want to fix the relationship, they're circumventing that and going around you by talking to your spouse, by talking to other family members to connect with your child because they want to have that connection. And I've gotten to the point, and this is a habitual thing, and this is why I can never be in cahoots with my sister no matter what happens. And I told that to my dad, and I will continue to tell that to my dad, that the constant things that she does that she feels that I don't know about or that I'm not aware of create the hole to get deeper and deeper and deeper, because she's not trying to rectify or reconcile or work through things or even have a meeting of the minds. For all things that my ex-partner Danielle was, we would have differences and respectfully talk about them, and at the end agree to disagree. But there was a lot of honesty and there was a lot of understanding of each other's points of view. That's all you care about. It's not about me forcing you to think my way or vice versa. It's more of, I understand your point of view, but let me explain mine. And I understand it and I sympathize with you, and I wish we could have figured this out sooner, or whatever it is, right? Like, you lament, you show sympathy. But unfortunately, with my sister, she doesn't do any of that because her pride is too strong. I'm psychoanalyzing her. Her pride is too strong to allow her level to come down. Like, the way my family views me, because believe it or not, I'm the youngest one, they view me as the little kid and as a spoiled, coddled little kid that never had any issues in life, never had any problems, and never had any challenges. And you know, life is great, and you're spoiled, and because you're spoiled, you don't understand what needs to be done. And I understand my sister's point of being aligned with family, because family helped her get out of the hole that she was in. If she didn't have my father, good luck. There's no doubt about it. Good luck. And who knows what the heck the world would have done and chewed her up and spit her out. I don't know. Only she knows the answers to that. But, you know, she became a money gremlin. And a very selfish, very living it up mentality. And that's just the antithesis of who I am. So as I go on this journey of growing up, reverse parenting, and realizing the toxicity of this dynamic and detaching from it, because that's when I needed to flourish. And still, those very same people that I just talked to you about feel I have a responsibility to take care of somebody that has never taken my advice, never listens to anything that I say and follows through with it because an older statesman said otherwise. And at this stage and point in life, it's like, well, you do what you do, because what I'm tired of is people creating their own train wrecks. People in life create their own issues, their own problems, just like I will in the future, right? Whatever decisions I make as a parent are going to impact the way my daughter views me in the long run. But parents are not held accountable. And the reason I hold them accountable is because I became a parent myself. And with all this trauma that I dealt with, granted, it wasn't their trauma, the level, but it was my trauma. It was a subjective trauma. I was able to realize that trauma cannot impact my child. I cannot let it penetrate that, because it's not fair to her, just like it wasn't fair to me. And I chose to break the cycle. I chose to not let the enslavement of lineage get the best of my happiness, of my well-being. Now, some people may say, well, they gave you life. Sure. Absolutely. 100% true. But let me ask you this. If you feel that, should, if a father raped his daughter or was alcoholic, abusive, and beat up everybody in the house, or was a drug user and came home and did all these crazy things that were toxic for long periods of time and never showed love, never showed support, never did anything that would remind the child of love and being valued and feeling like they were meant to exist, that the family wanted them to exist and they value them. If none of that was around, would you think that when the roles are reversed, when the child becomes an adult and the adult becomes the elderly, that the responsibility still falls on the child to take care of the elderly, even though that elderly never held up their part? And that's where the question, that's where the debates begin. That's where the debates have started. That's where people pick sides on that. I know I have a friend that deals with a similar situation, and we're on the same page, but the family doesn't agree with it. His family doesn't agree with it. And I understand it. Like, I understand the other side of it, but the only way you could understand it is if the example that I just gave you. Like, are you able to understand that when a parent didn't do their part? Like, my daughter never has to worry about me not telling her I love her. I hug her. I love her. I teach her. I show her. I give her opportunities. I remind her of the pitfalls. I do my very best to make her aware of what the world is going to be when she steps out of the cocoon of that is the support of mom and dad. I hope she gets it. But if she doesn't, she's going to learn the hard way. I was talking to somebody about that with their children, and they were telling me, you know, sometimes kids got to learn. They got to take a pounding over the head. I never wanted to be that because I grew up seeing an alcoholic uncle that was in and out of prison. I saw a schizophrenic uncle that to this day, he can't do anything for himself. And a mom that never wanted to better her life. And no matter what efforts I made, and any efforts that I made to make her life better, were always questioned, were always minimized, they were unappreciated. So as a young man, that's what I'm dealing with. I'm dealing with a sister that blames me for whatever her issues are, but it's never formally talked to me about them. I have a father that judges me and feels that I was spoiled, given everything, and that, you know, I never had it as hard as he did, and always blaming my mom for whatever ills occurred, and blames, I don't say he blames me, but he questions as to why I never reached out. He's asking a kid that was 9 years old why I didn't reach out and find him. Well, I ended up figuring things out on my own. So there was a point where I had to say, well, these people are not going to come and save me. These people are not going to come and help me. So I got to figure this out. And by the time I figured it out, he ended up coming back in my life, and that side of the family ended up coming back, and here we are, you know, many years later. And I'm still, this is one thing about me. It's like, I don't really want to talk about these things. The only reason I talk about these things is because the can is always being kicked to me, meaning my mom and the way she's being, the way she's always been, and everyone spreads, doesn't want to help, doesn't want to take care of her. And of course, my sister says, that's your responsibility because you're close. You're the closest. I don't care what you have going on. I don't care. I don't think your life is as busy as mine. You need to, that's your golden mom. You're the golden child. You need to take care of it. That has nothing to do with me. Oh, by the way, I'll help you only through the phone. And that's the thing that I think she fails to understand is that my sister fails to understand that the way you help, as far as over the phone and through conversations, that's a different experience than being in the trenches. And anybody that's been around me that knows my history with my mom, and I tell them the things that she's dealing with, you know what the first thing they all say? The first thing they all say, where's your sister in all of this? That's why when my mom had the recent episode, I checked out. I said, you know what? You haven't done any of this. You didn't do this. I was always responsible. When you left, I picked up the tab, and I continue to pick up the tab. And you were out living your life, doing the decisions that you made. And then you had your father get the jail out of free card and take care of you. And now, you know, you guys have a great relationship, knowing that at the end of the day, once he dies, you're going to get money and inheritance, and you'll be able to live the life that you've always wanted and flaunt about it, which is great. If that's what you're living for, God bless. I don't care. I mean, that's not the way I'm living my life. I'm like, yeah, I'm good. But that's the perspective that you want to take. Cool. I'm not going to fight you on it. But I think that the thing that I'm proud of is that the people that are around me, they see me every day. They see how I am as a father. They see how I am as a provider. They see me. And these are not things that I'm trying to toot my horn on again. It's no big deal. But like I said, I think that what happens is other people have a skewed vision. Like my sister doesn't have good perception of men, especially in a dating or co-parenting dynamic. I understand it, and I sympathize with you, but unfortunately, that's not me. And unless you see it in the flesh, unless you talk to the moms that I engage with, unless you see the neighbors that I engage with, unless you see the families that I engage with, in the role of a father, in the role of a co-parent, in a role of a friend, in a role, when you're not privy to that, it's hard to understand me, you know. And if you're trying to get me to understand me through my funny ass and crazy takes on this podcast, then it's like, okay, that's cool. I love it because part of me, my daughter knows who I am. And these podcasts were built so that she could see all different sides, because all of us have different sides. And unlike many people, I'm not afraid to speak my truth. It may not be your truth, and you may not understand my truth, but it's what I feel, it's what I've experienced. And luckily, I'm able to articulate it in a way where if someone was open-minded and not have any biases, they'll be able to understand. I'm not saying they'll agree with it. I'm not saying they can get on board with it. But they'll be able to see, okay, I understand that point of view. I remember with Danielle and I, we would have these conversations all the time. And it was one of the things that we would talk about, because she went through her trauma. And she dealt with a Jekyll and Hyde mom, meaning that her mom was, one flip side of the coin, was very loving, nurturing, attentive, all the things that we all relate to mother and daughter relationships with, love and affection, right? And then there was the flip side of her. And that flipping caused a lot of friction for many, many years until she had kids. And her mom was able to become the grandmother, the amazing grandmother to her kids. And unfortunately, she left this world too early. But it was something that we used to always talk about. I used to tell her, I always tell all the time, you experienced love at least. You experienced it, like the support, the love, the parents backing you, trying to help you succeed. You experienced that. Like, I had emotional neglect where I've been nicknamed the cold fish and all these a robot, unemotional, because that's what I grew up on. I grew up in a world where there was no emotion. There was no I love yous. There was no thank yous. There was no appreciation. There was no support. There was none of that. And luckily for me, I was able to experience things outside of that bubble. And I remember when I went to college and I experienced some of that. And I'll never forget this. I went back to Bridgeport with my mom. I took her on a flight I paid for. And I took her on a flight from Florida to Bridgeport to go see her mother again after 5 years. And I went up there. And I remember sitting in the little apartment and looking at my grandmother, looking at my uncle, looking at my mom. And I'm like, and just seeing that dynamic concoct, you know, like the arguing, this. And I'm just sitting there like, wow. I didn't realize how fucked up this all was. And I don't think they didn't even know how fucked up it really was. Because when you're in it, you don't have nothing to compare it to. It's hard for them to see. It's hard for them to understand where they're in the trenches every day with these people. And that was the beginning of me realizing, uh-oh, this is not conducive to my well-being if I'm trying to make something of myself. But unfortunately, when you make that decision and you have to cut people off, and the dynamic of family and the culture that I come from, it's looked at a crime. I remember my sister was telling me that, you know, that it's a crime if you were living in Puerto Rico, if you don't take care of your family, of your mom or something like that. And I'm like, well, I live 3 hours away. This is her decision to live there. I told her when I was in my teens that she can leave, go live her life, do whatever she had to do, because I was totally fine. And I was, and I knew that I it was very toxic. I was like, I can't continue this because this is going to drain me. This is not conducive to me getting ahead and being productive and with future hopes of having my own family and raising children and all that. It was not conducive to that. But when you have that family that has that mentality, remember that they have that mentality because they've went through life together. I didn't go through life with them. And most of my life has been without them. But they're not able to understand that because of the lineage, no matter what, you're part of it. But you feel the disconnect. We've lived 30 to 40 years without each other. What do you expect? Right? And there's going to be a disconnect. And when there's that large of a disconnect, there has to be a genuine open slate. And unfortunately, what I felt is judgment. So if you've been disconnected from somebody for so long, and the vibration they're giving you in conversations is one of judgment, meaning in disappointment in your choices of me playing sports, disappointment in how I make decisions, which they're not privy of knowing all the time. But yet the people that know me every day or engage with me will say otherwise. It's, you can't fight that fight. You have to let them think what they want to think. There's no dancing around that. And I think that's where, like, my disconnect comes in. That's where my lack of emotions kick in, because it's people, grown-ups in my life have made their own decisions. And if people want to ignore me, and if people don't want to feel that I'm smart, that my advice, like, I'll give you an example recently. Like, my mom is in a condition of basically a vegetable. She can't move. She can't get up. She can't do anything. God bless her. And when you start making phone calls and talking to professionals here in the area, they're telling you the processes that are currently going to be in place. for her to possibly get some assistance on a part-time basis. And I'm educating my mom on all of this because I'm being educated on this by the professionals that I speak with. And I understand the jargon, I understand the lingo. And from everything information that I've gathered, I've assessed that until all of these programs kick in that can possibly help her, and there's no guarantee, but it possibly help her, that we have to come out of pocket and be able to pay for her nursing because insurance at her stage doesn't cover it. It's called long-term care. For you kids out there, for you grown-ups out there, if you're worried about your kids not footing the tab for your assisted living when you're older, go ahead and get long-term care assistance. Okay? It's an insurance that you can get that you pay into. And then when you get old, you activate it and voila, now you're able to go to these assisted living facilities and be able to be taken care of and not have any family member worry about you. It's kind of like the opposite of a college. Remember how you pay into a college program and then once they turn 18, then you're able to use that like a Gerber. I remember that was like a Gerber, a scholarship program. You pay into it and then they fully pay for your children's scholarship. It's the same thing. And my mom didn't do that, which is fine. So now we're looking at the options that Florida provides. And they're obviously going to be more limited than, let's say, in New York, let's say in Connecticut, let's say in Illinois, let's say in Indiana, simply because Florida is not built on state taxes. It's built, there is no state taxes in Florida. So that means that a lot of the government programs that will be experienced in New York or Connecticut or Illinois or Indiana are going to be less up to par. They're going to be subpar. That's why a lot of people that are poor move to New York, move to Connecticut, move to Illinois, because there's heavy assistant government programs in those areas. Because that's the way the politics work in those states. So in Florida, I'm educating myself on all of this, and they're telling me this. They're saying, hey, this is the deal. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. I was even trying to talk to an attorney about it, right? What her rights are, what things they can do. Because you know how it is. You got to get litigious. You got to get litigious in this country. You got to get an attorney to knock doors because that's when shit gets fast. So I was talking to an attorney about getting that ball rolling. And my mom talks to my sister, and I guess my sister talks her out of getting that assistance that has to come out of pocket because the programs won't kick in time. It's not something that they're going to be able to. It's going to probably take a couple months. So I said, well, let's pay out of pocket. Let's have your sister split the cost, me and I, so that you can have somebody taking care of you from the moment you go back home. She can't stay here because I'm going to lose my job. It takes up a lot of my time. As much as I want to help and I'm okay with her even staying here, the lack of mobility is a problem. And I feel bad. But at the same time, what am I supposed to do? And then what I do is the people that are not in my circle, the people that have not invested in me or engaged with me are quick to say, you need to be there for her. You need to be there for her. And I'm like, well, I've been there for her the whole life. And she continues to make these decisions that are not productive or able to harness positive results. And I'm always being fought on that. So that's a very hard case. And so anyway, so my sister talks her out of getting assistance. And she's like, well, I'm just going to talk to a lady in the building and have somebody help me. I just said, okay, good luck. I'll be ready to take you tomorrow. Drive up there, do your thing. No problem. I'll go ahead and you handle it. God bless you. Good fucking luck. Because that's my farewell. I'm not going to engage in any way, shape, or form. Meaning that I'll still call. I still can. But I'm not going to get engaged in the level of taking care of somebody that is not going to take my advice. Remember, I was just told in the bathroom, I'm more intelligent than you, son. And I'm like, okay, I know what I'm doing. And I remember those words when I was little. I know what I'm doing. Don't tell me what to do. But here I am, being the one that's helping you, because everyone has kicked the can down on me. And everyone puts the onus on me to help her. To a person that doesn't want to take my advice, doesn't want to listen to anything I say, they think they know it all, and listen to advice from other people. I think that's the frustrating part about all of this, is that it's not that she doesn't take my mother, meaning if she doesn't take any advice, is that she takes advice from other people other than me. And I'm saying to myself, what? This is where my ego comes in. What is their history compared to mine? Like, what is their success with mine? How educated are they about these things versus me? Like, is this like a professional? And when I'm comparing it to my sister, it's like, you live in a different state. You haven't lived in Florida for 30 years. You have no idea in educating yourself about how it works here. I know how it works in your place. You know how it works in your system, in your state, but it doesn't work like that here. And if you made calls and educated yourself on that, you would understand. From the outside, I know that things work in California differently than they work here. But that's just me. That's just common sense. But people don't have that. People in Puerto Rico don't have that awareness, where they rely heavily on government there. Nowhere in Illinois or Indiana where they rely heavily on government on there. Here in Florida, there is none of that. There is no government assistance for the poor at the level that it is in other places. And when you don't understand that concept, and when you're trying to place your way of living and the way you live in your world to be the same as it is here, and give advice from that world, and I'm fighting against that, and that opinion, that uneducated opinion, trumps mine, that's in the trenches, that talks to people, that learns exactly what's going on the ground level. Do you think I'm going to continue with this since I've been dealing with it for 35 years? No. I'm going to check out. And anybody that thinks that I'm evil, anybody that thinks I'm mean, okay, I get it. I'm not going to ever make everyone happy. But I do my very best. I really do. And the people that are around me, the people that have known me, that have gotten to know me, that have seen me in the everyday struggle. I'll leave with this because it was kind of beautiful. Like my neighbors, I have beautiful neighbors where I live at. And they know that I'm taking care of my mom like full time, like 24/7 assistant. And they came over in the hurricane that I dealt with and helped me clean up the yard. And they helped me do work around the house because I haven't had time to handle the things that happen when you go through a hurricane. So it's been a juggling act of being a parent, the work environment, the parenting, and taking care of your personal affairs. And I remember my dad one time, like when my sister was complaining about me calling her out on a podcast, and my sister, the insensitive, selfish person that she is, was calling him during the time they were going through Maria, and her lack of empathy and sympathy for what the people were going through there, it was more about her. So she was venting to him and talking to him, and he's sending me letters like, look, like I don't need to hear any of this shit because I'm dealing with a category 5 hurricane. And I was like, dude, you're barking up the wrong tree. I'm not the one sending you letters and complaining about anything. I know what you're going through. I've asked you if you need something. I've asked anybody if they need something. Like, I'm the last person that's going to put anything on your doorstep. And I remember the next letter, he was like, you know what? You're right. He didn't say it verbatim like that, but the energy of the letter was, you know what? You're right. Like, I was, you know, definitely out of, and that's why I'm appreciative of my dad, because I know when I talk to him that he's able to comprehend things. But unfortunately, I know that he has my sister's ear, and they have a camaraderie and a bond, and I love that. But I'm not trying to trump that, because I know he's in a tough spot where he's just trying to be good to both of his kids. But again, we're night and day. We're different, and we're not gonna see things the same. And think about this too. This just tells you how my sister is, or how naive she is, or how unaware she is of circumstances or environments. I just spoke to you about the hurricane that I went through and the things that I'm having to go through. And one of the things that my mom obviously was going through was not being able to pay the rent where she lives at. I don't have access to her finances. My sister does. And when my mom was telling her, hey, can you send a money order to the apartment complex? You know what was her initial response? Hey, why don't you have me do it? Her son. Have him go to the bank, take it out, and then drop you off with it. And this is the selfishness, the things that I cannot. This is why we're oil and vinegar, like oil and water, whatever you want to call it, whatever contrasting things you want to call it, because the lack of awareness and that's like me, her living in California and going through like a 7.2 earthquake. And then she's having to deal with mom full time while she's dealing with the aftermath of a hurricane. And they're calling me saying, hey, can you go ahead and write a check? And I say, no, I'm not going to write a check. You figure it out. You're close. The banks are closed down here. School is out for 3 weeks. All that shit on TV. Yeah, it's true. Luckily, I'm not there. I mean, but I got a good fucking hit. 31 years living in Florida. This is the most intense one. And the weird thing about this one was there was no rain. Little rain where I was living. Usually you get flooded up to the driveway, and it goes up, and in some areas, and absolutely dead. If you are near the coastline, near 41, as we like to say, you are screwed. Your house is done. But I wasn't. But that doesn't mean that the banks are open. That doesn't mean that the restaurants are open. That doesn't mean that things are not up and running. It takes time. And I think that was the insensitivity and unawareness that she shows, just lets you know her mindset, just lets you know where she's at. And topple that with her feeling of superiority, of empowerment, of superiority that she gets from her family, and just this justification and enabling of her behavior, because she's, again, kind of, I guess, aligning with the values that the family want to exude, then I'm fighting an uphill battle from all angles, as you can say. From my mother not taking my advice or caring for me to, you know, follow anything that I say, even though I educate myself, and to my sister that really at the end of the day has no awareness, no understanding of things. She still runs to my dad for advice and things to do, where it's funny to me. Like, it's like, wow, like you, it's just mind blowing sometimes, but that's what I was born into. But when you speak to this truth and to this way, it's something a lot of people, again, from the outside, can't understand how I can be this way. And it's, I never wanted to be this way. In my perfect world, I wanted to love everybody. I want to hug and feel love and show support. But that's not the family I come from. And that's not saying that they're bad people, but the dynamic of a family is not one where it's something that others can relate to because they don't experience it. And, you know, and I don't want to feel like this energy or these dynamics of the friction between my sister and I is infiltrating on my father's side. I remember my father, he wrote me in a letter saying, "Hey, I don't know what you guys are going on, but keep my family out of it." He said it just like that. Keep my family. Like, that's your mom's side of the business. Like, and I'm saying to myself, I'm not bringing this to your doorstep. Like, you got to talk to your daughter about that because she's the one that runs to you about these issues. Not me. I don't need nothing from you. I always tell my dad when I come over and see him, it's, I just grab a chair. I just want to eat whatever he has, or I bring my own food. I sit there for however time he can give me until he has to go on and do other things. And that's that. And, you know, these ladies are always talking about him in a bad way. But I don't care. I mean, I'm cool. I get my father. I get it. None of us are perfect. That's why I don't, you know, the when I start getting into judgment is when you start judging me first and you start throwing darts at me. Then I'm like, okay, or you disrespect me, or you don't, just like my sister's doing, like just circumventing. That's the way she's always been with me since we were kids. Always been like that. She would play with my Nintendo and then pretend she never played with it. And I'd be like, no, I know you played with it. But she couldn't be honest with me and upfront with me. And I think what happens is with these podcasts that I put out, I'm putting her on blast because she can paint a picture to the world about how she is. And I'm not saying that she isn't great. And I'm sure that she can have a great relationship with my daughter that is genuine and is wholesome. And it's true. But when it comes to my relationship with her, I think the resentment that she carries and the hatred that she carries for me, for the things that I caused her to feel, she could never let go of. I get it. Like, you know, if I was this evil person, right on. I get it. I'm not saying I was perfect, but remember, I was a kid too that didn't have a father, that was uprooted, and I had no one to talk to. I had no one that supported me. I had no one that showed me love or care and nurture. So I had a lot of anger in me. I mean, how would you feel? You know, I could, and again, I'm not saying everyone handled their trauma differently. And I'm not saying that I'm proud of it, or I'm not saying that I, you know, but I own it. I fully own it. And I have no problem acknowledging whatever things I did. But we also have to acknowledge that we all had a part in the toxicity at one point. I never asked for this. And when I realized that this is not something I wanted to be a part of, or wanted this to be my family, I just checked out. And then you guys looked at me in a negative way, like, look, like, I don't have to be attached to this toxicity. I don't. I create my own family. I create it with people that love me, that care for me, and I care for them back. I have 4 surgeries and a car accident. A pretty bad one where I was bedridden. I couldn't walk. I had 4 different surgeries where I couldn't walk twice. I was bedridden for 6 weeks in scooters, all while taking care of a child. No one helped me. No one in my family helped me one bit. No one flew down. No one called to see how I was doing. Nothing, because I don't maintain that connection with them. I'm not saying that they owed me that, but because I'm always able to figure it out. But my friends here, the people that I've cultivated as my family, were here for me. I miss my boy Anthony. Rest in peace. I love you. That was my brother. He understood me. And unfortunately, he passed away. But it's that's the love that I cultivate with the people I'm with, whether they're white. And my sister would have a problem with that. Like, you and your white friends, you protect them. And it's like, yeah, I protect my white friends. I protect my black friends. I protect my Spanish friends. I protect my friends that have shown me love, that never judged me, that were there for me when I needed somebody to be there. There were father figures that didn't judge me and supported me. They did so many great things for me, gave me so much great advice to help me when I was down, when I was hurt. And that's a family that I levitate to. And I always tell that to my daughter, like, toxic people, man, I was telling her about her friend. I was like, hey, you don't have to take that. You don't have to take that toxicity from anybody. And I told her, I had to learn this when I was 35, 36. I'm trying to teach you that now at 12 years old, that you have to create boundaries. You have to have some sanity and to keep your mental state in a great place and keep your energy positive. And if family's not bringing that to the table, you have to let them go. If your partner's not bringing you that, you got to let them go. Because we already have enough shit to deal with when we step outside in the world. The world is not all sunshine and rainbows, like Rocky would say. It's an ugly place that it's going to kick you down and ridicule you and just talk shit about you nonstop. And that's the part for me that I'm very mindful of at this stage in life going forward, is that I'm not going to align myself with people that are toxic, that are judgmental, that don't respect you, that don't care, that don't show concern, that don't show appreciation, that don't have any empathy or sympathy for who you are, and are selfish and make it all about them and their value system and don't want to respect yours or devalue your value system. Minimize it, marginalize you, judge you, all these things, ostracize you, make you feel inferior, whatever. Even though I'm in a position of feeling proud of where I'm at in life and having my daughter feel proud of her father, which she is. And not only that, but the people around me remind me of that because they see it. They see it every day. My family doesn't. And maybe someday they see it, but unfortunately, they're built the way they're built. My sister's always going to be that way, a person that chases money, that is all about the flashy things, about the good life, the entitlement, and the victim mentality, as I like to say. I chose not to be a victim. I chose to say, fuck it, let's figure this out. I'm in a great position to figure things out, no matter if there's racism, no matter if there's bigotry, no matter if there's discrimination. For that one door that will close, I will find three doors that would open for me. And I'm still going here, and I'm still pushing, and I love life, and I love everything that's in it. And I thank my parents for the gift of life, whether they wanted me to be here or not. Whether they wanted to take that responsibility or they understood what it took to be a good parent, they did what they could. And I appreciate them, but that doesn't mean that there wasn't any residual effects. And that doesn't mean that I won't hold them accountable. That's something that, again, my father tried to talk to me about. And I said to him, I said, so you got to give leeway to family. He didn't say it, but in a roundabout way, he's like, you got to give your family a little bit more leeway. And I said, no, I'm not giving leeway to family, because there's no resume. No, especially in my formative years, there is no resume of support, of reaching out, of caring, of. And if they feel they did, it was very minuscule in comparison to what I was experiencing in the everyday support from the people that were around me. So I was comparing that love to their love, and I'm like, shit, I'm just getting more judgment. I'm getting them telling me how to be and how to act and what decisions to make and not to make, or what advice I would give. They would think that's not good enough. And it's like, okay, well, you know, I told that to my mom. I said, you know what? You think you got figured life out? You go for it. You don't need me. If you think you know it all, go for it, man. It's like, and I told that to my dad too. It's like, look, if I'm a hindrance to you, if I'm somebody that's really bothersome in your life, guess what? Yeah, I'll be out of your life just like I was for this time. It's like, I don't want to be a hindrance to anybody. And if you don't want to make the effort and being genuine and transparent and be clear and let go of things like my sister is, then that's cool. And then we'll stay apart. And if you want to still disrespect my wishes of me wanting to just be able to rectify things with us, or have at least a meeting of the minds, instead of you dismissing your actions and the way you're being and not acknowledge that and wanting to build a community, you know, my daughter's going to build whatever connection with you, and that's cool. I don't get it. I get it. I can't stop that. I told that to Jazz today. I said, I can't stop that. If that's what you want to do, and if she's genuine with you and you guys build a concoct meaning, but the one thing I want you to remember, Jazz, is like, there's a reason why I stay away, because the way she's being with you is different than how she is with me. She's built with resentment towards me. She's built with jealousy towards me. She's built with those things. And I'm saying that because her actions show that. And they're consistent, because like I told you on an example of many that I have on the cruise that I talked about earlier, if I was her, I would have been like, man, I've been on a lot of cruises. I've been on a lot of trips. I've gotten a lot of money and support from my dad. Yeah, I think that's cool that they're going to do it. And of course, you know, that's cool that they have that once in a while. And I think she felt like I was penetrating her space. And I don't think she even realizes it. I think it's just subconscious vitriol that acts out in that way and has impeded. Because when I see that, when I see like the level of jealousy like that and how she influences my father, I don't want to be a part of it. I'm like, okay, well, you guys go do you. Like, if you're going to let her run amok like that, and that's cool. You know, I get it. Like, that's no problem, sir. You do what you do. You know, I legally changed my name because part of it was when I reconnected with you. Oh, my father I'm talking to now, it's like the first thing you say, you're not like me at all in any way. And anytime I have conversations with you or anything like that, I feel that you always make it a point to say that I'm not you. And I'm saying to myself, okay, that gives me even more reason to change my name, because why would I keep my name that is reflective of you? Like, I'm junior, third, whatever it is, and my father doesn't even acknowledge me in a way of appreciation or being proud of me, and it's always has always judged me. And he has his moments where he's really good, but man, when my sister gets in his ear, it's a different animal. And I see it because when I talk to him and I have the interaction personally, and he knows that I don't need any money, I'm not coming for money like everyone else does, I'm not coming for favors, I'm just coming to hang out with you as a father and son, because I think you deserve that. I think you were deprived of that. And whether you were right or wrong in the way you and my mom blew up, it's, you still, as a father, I understand the value of you reconnecting with your children. There's a reason why me and my ex-wife get along great, to the point that it makes other women jealous when I'm dating them, because I understand that what my parents weren't able to provide for me, I didn't want my child and future children to not have that disconnect. And I'm very proud that I have a great synergy with my ex-wife. We get along great. I would even go out and say we still love each other. I care for her greatly. And I know she cares for me too, and she helps me. And, you know, she allowed me to stay in her house for the hurricane because I didn't have any power. And I was with my mom that was a vegetable. And I don't think it would have been the right environment staying in my home without no power, without no water, with her being where she was at. And my ex-wife opened her door, opened her home, and allowed us to all stay there. And her family has been supportive of me and many other people. It's just like I said, I have built my own family that is non-lineage related. And it's something that my blood family would never understand because that's not the way they operate. Because the way families operate is I don't trust anybody outside of family. We don't trust you. Yeah, you married into the family, but you're not one of us. That's the energy they bring. It's like if you're not, and even when you're in it, you're still being judged. And you're like, okay, well, I mean, if that's the way you guys want to live, that's the way you guys want to be, cool. I'm not going to jump into that. But again, when the can is being kicked down to me to handle business, knowing everything I just talked to you about, the toxicity and the reverse parenting and all these things that I deal with, it's best for me to keep it at a distance. It's best for me to know that other people have to step up and do their part. It's up to me to realize that there's nothing I can do here that's going to end well, because people create their own train wrecks and expect me to clean them up. And just like I got out of the business of being there for my friends in 5-hour therapy sessions, like I'm out of the business of having to tolerate people's shit because of family, because of whatever connection, because at the end, people have to be held accountable no matter what it is. You cannot be allowed to be rude to people, to be condescending to people, to be all these negative emotions to others, and think because it's in the name of family, it's totally fine. I don't allow it. I don't accept it. And because of that, I am more alienated and disconnected from family than others would be, because I refuse to tolerate that. And I hope with me venting this long is, and again, anybody that listens to this that has a contrasting view, they're not going to care. I don't even think people are going to listen to it this long, but I just wanted to vent this out because, again, I mean, I've been dealing with a 2-week experience of all these things that I've been dealing with and trying to do my best. And I'll always do my best, and I never will care to have any sympathy. I don't need any sympathy, but it's having the other side, like my sister, and having my father understand that. I'm not saying they have to accept the way I think, like Danielle. Danielle never accepted the way I thought. Even though with that example I gave you about her mother, because I was telling her I rather would have had that, a mom that was a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, than what I experienced, which was pure emotional neglect. And just appreciate the good moments you had. Because I couldn't tell you that. I couldn't tell you that I had any good moments. My best moments were in college, living in the dorms, making new friends, playing basketball, that competition, wanting to get better, being around my elders and them teaching me things about life that I implement now. Those were the best years of my life. It wasn't me growing up with family. Everything with family was always toxic. It was always judgmental. It was always talking down. It was always anger. There was always all this negative thing that my mom was trying to bring here. And I had to tell her, like, look, I'm not in that business anymore. I don't even give my mom that address of where I live at, because she would panic about mail coming in. And I would say, no, I'm not going to, like, you're not going to have me worry about mail. That's the last thing I worry about in my life. Okay. Whether I get a package or not, I don't need anyone's package. Okay. But you're not going to have me checking the mail 5 times. And if it doesn't come through that you want to vent to me about someone stealing something, where in the environment I live in, there is none of that going on. Maybe if you have an Amazon package, but I don't think people are going to be stealing food and gift cards and things like that. Not where I stay. So it's I just stay away from the toxicity. I stay away from it all, whether you're family or friends. I match your effort. I match your energy. And if it's not positive, I have to disconnect. And if you're not aware of correcting yourself, if you're not aware of meeting me halfway, then it's not worth the energy. So I think with this chapter with my mom, as I bring her back home to Lakeland and I go back to my routine of work and us getting our footing back after this hurricane, it's a very self-reflecting period. Even though I'm very full of gratitude knowing that a Category 4 came through here and we were able to sustain it, survive it, and be able to pick up the pieces faster than, let's say, in Puerto Rico, faster than in other places that are third world countries, it's a very good mindset to have, that is full of gratitude, full of appreciation. And the troubles and the struggles that I deal with in this dynamic are nothing in comparison to what other people are dealing with. But I needed to self-reflect on this, not only for me, but for my daughter when one day she gets older and she can understand my mindset. And not only that, but she understands me as a person, but it just brings, these audios bring more clarity to that. But trust me, I stick to 15 minutes, not an hour and 40, to get my point across. This ain't in my body.